Today is the 16th of August 1994, and I want to take up today the subject of surprise and the subject of delusion and various other related subjects. This tape is most closely associated with tape number 2 of the set, and it will be advisable to put the two of them together, actually. Tape 2 and this number tape, which will be tape number 14. They do come out as a pair, these two tapes do. Now, the subject of surprise is one of the more interesting subjects, one of the more interesting psychological subjects, the subject of surprises. The reason for this is that, it's not only interesting, it's also... it's a rather unique subject, the subject of surprises. For as far as I know, that if you postulate that you'll have a surprise, then it's the only postulate you can make in this universe and be absolutely certain that it's going to work, and that you will in fact get the surprise. The postulate simply never fails. If you postulate that you will have a surprise, then you will have a surprise. That's all there is to it. The mechanism is quite fascinating, and I hope you'll be able to explain it on this tape. In order to do so, it will be of interest to take up one of the more obscure paradoxes. And this is known as the paradox of the surprising blackout. And this is the way it goes: an army commander calls all his troops together in the main hall one evening about 7 o'clock, and he says to them, he says, in order that we should be prepared for every contingency, he says, and be on the alert, he says, we're going to have sometime this week, between one evening this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday or Friday, and sometime between 7 o'clock in the evening and 9 o'clock in the evening, he says, I've arranged that we're going to have a surprising blackout. All the lights will go out, and so you must be prepared to have torches handy to go to your action stations, and we will go into the mode of a surprise attack on the military installation. So he goes ahead and with his blackboard and gives all the details of what he wants everyone to do and so forth. And, then he dismisses the men, and they all wander back to their barracks and sit and talk about this. The surprising blackout, and then the barrack room lawyer finally speaks up and says, "Look, chaps," he says, "this whole thing, there's something very odd about it." He said, "There's something very odd about it." He said, "Look," he says, "clearly you told us that this surprising blackout is going to occur one evening this week, either Monday between 7 and 9, Tuesday 7 and 9, so on, right up through Friday and 7 and 9. Well," he said, "if this is so," says the barrack room lawyer, "quite clearly the surprising blackout can't occur on Friday evening, because if we haven't had it up till 9 o'clock Thursday evening, obviously it's going to occur on Friday evening, and then it won't be a surprise, will it?" And all the men agree with this is so. So he says, "So the surprising blackout can't occur on Friday." So he said, "But by similar reasoning," he said, "it can't occur on Thursday evening." He said, "Because we know it can't occur on Friday, so therefore, if it hasn't occurred Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, it must occur on Thursday. But then again, if it occurs on Thursday, it won't be a surprise." And they all nod their heads in agreement that his reasoning is quite impeccable. And he said, "Now, by similar reasoning," he said, "it can't occur on Wednesday evening, and it can't occur on Tuesday evening." He said, "And it can't occur this evening." He said, "So this surprise blackout simply can't occur." And at that moment, all the lights went out, and they had a surprise. Now, what on earth is going on here? The barrack room's lawyer's reasoning is quite sound. It's quite sound. Well, how come they got the surprise? He'd proved by cold hard logic that they couldn't possibly have a surprising blackout. Yet there they had one, and had the surprise because they just proved that they couldn't have one, and then but then when it happened, they of course got the surprise. Now what's going on here? Well, let's have a look at this. Now, bear in mind what the military commander told them. He told them that they were going to have a surprising blackout. Now, if he'd have just told them that they were going to have a blackout on one of those evenings, either Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday or Friday evening, then, of course, they wouldn't have been able to use this reasoning that they used and so forth. And they would have simply said, OK, well, the blackout is either going to occur Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday or Friday. And they would have gone about their business knowing that one of the evenings they were going to have a blackout. And the thing wouldn't have been a surprise at all. They would have maybe got up to Thursday evening and thought, oh, well, it's going to be tomorrow evening sometime. But it wouldn't have... there would have been no paradox here at all. It would have been, everything would have been quite straightforward. The lights would have gone out sometime during that, either Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday or Friday, between 7 and 9 o'clock in the evening, you see, and they would have had their military exercise. But the commander didn't say that. He said, you will have a surprising blackout. And because he said that, they made this reasoning, which is quite valid reasoning on the basis of what he said, and arrived at an erroneous conclusion. Their conclusion was obviously false, because they concluded that the surprising blackout couldn't occur. But it did occur, and they got their surprise. So therefore, although their reasoning was valid, their reasoning is valid, their premises were false. They were basing it on a false premise. So what was the false premise they were basing it upon? Well, the false premise they were basing it upon was that they were going to have a surprising blackout. Look, the military commander told them that you're going to have a surprising blackout. Now, that was false. The truth of the matter was they were going to have a blackout. You see that? That's the truth of the matter. When he said you're going to have a surprising blackout, that was false. There was a lie in the statement. You see, once he said you're going to have a blackout, the blackout can't be a surprise, because he just told them they're going to have a blackout, you see. So it can't be a surprising blackout, because he just told them that they're going to have a blackout. Get it? So it can't be a surprise. So therefore, the blackout they're going to have is a non-surprise. But they once they agree and say, oh yes, we're going to have a surprising blackout, they buy his lie. And once they buy the lie, of course, all their deductions they make turn out to be false, because they're based upon a false premise. Which then, of course, they end up in the ridiculous state of affairs where they say, well, we can't have a surprising blackout. And then, of course, the lights go out and they have their surprising blackout, and they all get a surprise. And of course, they'd all agreed to the postulate that there would be a surprising blackout. So the postulate came true. The military commander said there would be a surprising blackout, and there was a surprising blackout. Get it? You see the paradoxical nature of the situation, and the fact that what I said early on in the lecture, that the surprise is the only postulate that we know of, it's the only postulate I know of, that you can be absolutely, if you make this postulate, you can be absolutely sure that you're going to get the surprise. Never fails. Well, why doesn't the postulate ever fail? All right, well, to understand that, I better give you another example. Back in the 1950s in London, there used to be a game us auditors played, and it's based upon a very, very old game on the time track. Very, very, very early in this universe, there's a game called the Surprise Game. You see, the spiritual being, he goes up to another being and says, look now, he says, imagine this box here. You got this box, imagine a box. He says, yes, says the other being, and he imagines a box. And he says, just imagine, he said, that when you open the lid of this box and look inside, you will get a surprise. Just agree that will be so. And the other being says, all right. I agree that when I open up the lid of the box and look inside, I will get a surprise. So the first being says to him, okay, so now go ahead and open the lid of the box and look inside. So he opens the lid of the box, but he's just mocked up, opens it, looks inside, and of course gets a surprise. You see, they thought, wow, it's actually a marvellous game, you see, surprise game. And we used to play the game in London. Ron Hubbard introduced the game to us. He told us it was an early track game, and many of us checked it out and found it is so. You can find it. You can find this game on anyone's time track, right? Very, very early on, very early university's game is the surprise game. Now, I used to play this game with all the other auditors. We would just play on each other and play on, get other people to play this game and get our pre-clears to play this game. And I noticed something quite interesting about this game, that people who couldn't make the game work were heavy cases. In other words, if a person who could make this game work, you could try this game on them, and they'd open the lid of the box and get a surprise, they were pretty easy running pre-clear. There wasn't any great case difficulties. But when you've got someone, you explain the thing to them and got them to do it, and they open the box up, nip the box up, never got a surprise, then this was a difficult case. But we never figured out why this was so. It was so, and other auditors spoke to me about it, and they checked it out too, and they found that all the people that could make this game work were easy running pre-clears, and all those who couldn't make the game work were rather heavy cases. And there the matter sort of rested. I couldn't figure out why it was. I thought it must be something to do with games, you know. It must be something to do with this game of surprise. And there the matter was dropped and so forth. And it's only many, many years later, when I was researching in the area of TROM, that I began to put all these bits together, the subject of surprise and so forth, and tied it up with various other things, and tied it up with to understand why, when a person can play this game, they're a pretty easy running PC. When they can't play this game, never get the surprise when they open the box up, they're a rather difficult case. Well, now, before we proceed, we would have to go ahead and know a little bit more about the subject of a surprise. Well, before you can be surprised in this universe, before you can have a surprise, you have to be willing to not know something. Now, that is absolutely fundamental to this game. If you are willing to not know something, you can always get a surprise. Now, almost anyone can do this, but a person who's in pretty good case shape and got good control over their to-know postulates and their to-not-know postulates can actually do this most markedly. And that is, they can always make their life most surprising by upping their willingness to not know, by just increasing their willingness to not know, or, put it another way, to decrease their willingness to know. See? If you do this, increase your willingness to not know, you'll find that life becomes a constant series of surprises. If, on the other hand, you increase your willingness to know, which amounts to decreasing your willingness to not know, all the surprises go out of your life. See? And you can juggle these two postulates, to know and to not know, and balance them up so that you can get just the right amount of surprise in your life that makes life interesting for you. It's simply a matter of balancing the willingness to know against the willingness to not know, and getting it to the level which gives you just the right amount of surprise that you think is just right for you. You see, it's entirely a matter of juggling those postulates, to willingness to know and the willingness to not know. All right. Well, now let's return to our surprise game, our game with the box, where the spiritual being postulates that when he opens the box, he will get a surprise, and then he goes ahead and opens the box and gets the surprise. Now, of course, this game can be played solo. It's a completely solo game. In fact, it's the earliest solo game I know of in the universe. There's no earlier solo game than the surprise game. So there we are. It's sort of basic on this subject of solo games that a person can play with themselves. It's a surprise game. And there's an important point which will come up later in the talk. So bear that in mind, that this is a basic game on the subject of solo games. It's basic. It's a basic solo game. It's the surprise game. Now, let's examine the surprise game a little bit more carefully. We've got the box, and the person that says, okay, he mocks up the box, and he says that when I open the box, he agrees that when he opens the box, he will have a surprise. When he opens the box and looks into the box, he will get a surprise. Now, let's just examine carefully what these steps here. He mocks up the box, then he agrees or postulates that when he opens the box and looks inside the box, he will get a surprise. Well, quite clearly, he has to not know what is in the box. But look, there's nobody else putting anything in the box except him, right? So there's these various steps. This is where the not know bit comes in, you see. In order to play this game, there's various things he has to be able to do. First of all, he has to be able to not know. Then he has to be able to to do something, mock something up, not know that he's doing it. In other words, he's got to be able to play a game with himself. Yeah, all these are requisites to being able to play the surprise game. Now you're beginning to see why the person who can play this game is in present time now, in the universe now, isn't in a difficult case condition, and why people who can't play this game are rather heavy cases. You see that? Anyone who can play games with themselves and can manipulate their no and not no postulates to such a degree that they can play the surprise game with themselves, they still have considerable control over those postulates, don't they? And if they've got that much control over the to know postulate and that much control over the to not know postulate, which happen to be two of the postulates out of the basic goals package, would bear in mind. We know that now, but we didn't know it back in the 1950s. We know that now. That goals package is fundamental. If they've got that much control over these fundamental postulates in that basic goals package, there can't be all that much wrong with their case. You see that? Because it means that the basic to know goals package isn't charged up all that far. Get it? So the diagnostic aspects that I discovered back in the 1950s relating this ability to play the surprise game and an easy running pre-clear, and relating it to that a person has an inability to play this game to the rather heavy running PC, was a correct observation. Now let's press on. Now, if you think about this for a moment, let's take a spiritual being who's very, very adept at playing the surprise game. Well, if he was very, very good at this surprise game, and very, very good at being able to mock things up like this and get surprises, he would be almost self-complete, you know, in terms of games, wouldn't he? Because he'd be able to create an opponent there, and which is really him mocking it up. He'd be able to mock up an opponent and play a game with his opponent, but the opponent is really his own mock-up. I mean, essentially, let's not kid ourselves that this whole thing of the surprise game there's nobody else involved but him. There's nobody reaching into that box, putting things in there against his will, against his choice. The whole thing is being done by him. And the whole surprise, he gets the surprise, but it's him that's putting things in the box or taking things out of the box and changing the conditions of the box and making all the mock-ups and so forth. He's playing the whole game and still getting the surprise. And it's all done with the dexterous use of the know and the to not know postulates. Now, we could say, and you can't disprove this as a proposition, we could say that a spiritual being, only got involved with games with other beings in this universe when his surprise game became boring to him. when he could no longer be surprised or sufficiently surprised in his own little own universe surprise game. I'm not seriously suggesting that this is the way it happened, but I will point out that it could have happened that way, that it could happen that way. That a being with very excellent control over the four postulates of the To Know Goals package could play some very, very involved surprise games with himself and could keep himself very, very amused here, very, very amused. Well, now let's just pause here and consider this surprise game from a therapeutic point of view. Quite clearly, when we run the basic To Know Goals package at level 5, where we're handling the four postulates of the To Know Goals package, we're clearly improving the person's ability to handle those four postulates, and therefore improving their ability to handle the surprise game, right? But is there any other goals package that we could use that more specifically addresses the surprise game? Yes, there is. There's the To Surprise Goals Package. Now, the To Surprise Goals Package, the four postulates of this goals package are to surprise, to not surprise, to be surprised, and to not be surprised. And, wait for it, the package is erasable. You can test this whichever way you like. You can test the ionization. You can put the postulates to surprise and to be surprised. You'll find that they ionize mass white or coloured. And or you can do the earlier test with it and discover that the postulate to surprise is in no way opposed to the to be known postulate of the basic package. So the to surprise goals package is erasable, and when you test it, the third and final proof of course is that when you test it and run the package in therapy, it does actually erase. It's an erasable package. I erased it some time ago. It's quite an erasable package. Now, a person who can easily play the surprise game with themselves has next to no charge on that package. But a person who cannot play that surprise game has one hell of a lot of charge on that package. They can have so much charge on that to surprise package that they do best to abandon it and realize that the to surprise package is within the To Know Goals package, which it is really. It's a part of the To Know Goals package, because the whole of the subject of surprise is absolutely fundamentally bound up with the subject of knowing and not knowing, as we've already discussed. So it's no surprise to discover that once you realise that the surprise goals package is so closely associated with the basic package, that it will collapse. It will quite easily, quite readily collapse. And so it's an easy one to erase, but it's very diagnostic of the heavy case. The person has trouble with the surprise goals package. You can know that they're going to have a lot of trouble with the To Know Goals package, and they're going to have a lot of trouble on the subject of knowing and not knowing. Now, as I've already mentioned, the To Surprise game is the earliest solo game on the track, and the To Surprise game leads quite naturally into what is the second earliest solo game on the time track. The way it happens is this: this is the way the cycle progresses. The person plays the surprise game, and bear in mind, in the surprise game, there's no opponent actually mocked up, is there? There's no the opponent is there, but the opponent is only there because of his postulates. You know, his postulates that he's known, not no postulates that he's using in the surprise game give the illusion of the opponent, right? Well, eventually the person playing the surprise game thinks to himself, well, it'd be a nice idea to actually create the opponent who's putting things into the box, or whatever the surprise. In other words, he creates an identity over there that's giving him the surprise. And this would be a natural extension of the to surprise game. Now, this is the game called the Playmate. It's a definite point on the track. You'll find it. The game is Playmate. Actually, the word surprise will read quite strongly on the meter if this area is charged. It is with many people, and the word Playmate will read on the meter too. They're definite games on the time track. Is the Playmate. Now, there's a surprise game, which leads into the game of the Playmate. Now, the Playmate is the being mocked up. It's his own mock-up. Is the being he mocks up to play games with. See, that's his Playmate. And at this point of the track of the Playmate, you'll find the spiritual being who goes into great conversations with his Playmate. And the Playmate's always with him, and he carries this mock-up of his Playmate around with him. And no matter what he's doing, the Playmate's always sitting there, and if he gets into any difficulties, he'll always have a little word with the Playmate. Now, as I'm speaking these words, do you recognise something from childhood on the subject of the Playmate? Recognise something that is common to almost all children in childhood? Yes, you've spotted it. The teddy bear. The teddy bear. The teddy bear phenomena in human childhood is a direct throwback, you might say, to the Playmate game on the early track in this universe. The child simply mocks up the Playmate. The young child mocks up the Playmate, and he personifies it as the teddy bear. And we see this young child, this young toddler, carrying this teddy bear around with him all the time. He converses with it, often not in English, in some language best known to himself. And he won't be parted with it. When he goes to bed every night, he takes his teddy bear with him, and the teddy bear is in bed with him all night long. When he plays his games with his in the house during the day, his teddy bear's sitting there watching him. And if you watch the child, you'll see him converse with the teddy bear. He'll say something to the teddy bear, and you'll see the child stop, and he's looking at the teddy bear, and the teddy bear is speaking to the child. You can't hear it, of course, but the child is conversing with his Playmate. The teddy bear is very, very real to the child, and is a very real identity to the child as his teddy bear. If you've ever picked up this period of your own time tracking very early childhood, you'll realise that what I'm saying is completely true and factual, that this is the Playmate is a definite solo game that all children, no, I would say all, that darn near all children play, is the game of the Playmate. The surprise game, which is the previous on the track, the surprise game precedes the Playmate game. But strangely enough, the surprise game is just a little bit too intellectual for the young child. So he'll play the Playmate game with his teddy bear, but the surprise game is a bit too much for intellectual for him. He won't play that. It's as if he needs the substance of the teddy bear. He needs the identity there, something he can lay his hands on, something he can see, to play the Playmate game. But essentially, it's the surprise game plus mass. That's all the Playmate game is. It's the surprise game plus the mass of the identity that is his Playmate and can be his opponent in the games that he plays. Now, what happens to the Playmate game in childhood? Where does it end up? Well, the child drags this teddy bear around with them, usually for some months, and then one day you find the child's no longer there's the teddy bear, and the child's ignoring the teddy bear, and the game is over. It's as if the child, I remember in my case, I simply got bored with it. I simply got bored with the teddy bear. Got bored with the game. I just decided there were better games to play out in the real universe, and I didn't need this teddy bear. Didn't need this Playmate anymore. I could stand on my own feet. I didn't need to keep conversing with the Playmate. I realised that there was nothing he could tell me that I didn't know myself. So that ended the game. And I think that's how most children end the game, is that they simply get bored with the game And that's the end of the teddy bear. And Mum picks up the teddy bear and puts it in the cupboard, and there it stays forever. The child's finished with the teddy bear. Now, it's no surprise, no pun intended here, it's no surprise to discover that that any ill effects of the Playmate game can also be erased and handled in the surprise gosh package, because the Playmate game, the game of the Playmate, is basically the surprise game. It's just got that extra bit of mass in it, and it's got the personification of the opponent in terms of the Playmate. You get it? So the little to surprise goals package will handle the to surprise game and the game of the Playmate. It will not only handle it in childhood, in this lifetime for you, but it will handle it over the whole track for you. It'll run the whole track, run the game out, whole track. But it will also run out more than that, as we will discover as we go on. Are there any pitfalls, any liabilities to the surprise game? And more importantly, are there any pitfalls to the liabilities to the game of the Playmate? Yes, there is. There's one, and as far as I know, only one liability to this game. And this this liability is quite an important subject. The liability is that the person believes that their Playmate is alive in their own right. I'll give it to you again. It's so important. I'll make sure that you got it. I'll repeat it to you again. The liability of the Playmate game is that the person can come to believe that the Playmate is alive in his own right. Now, clearly, such a belief is a false belief. The Playmate is nothing else but a mock-up. And once the person says to himself, or comes to believe, that his teddy bear or his Playmate, or wherever it is on the track, somewhere in the Playmate game, he comes to believe that the Playmate is alive in his own right, he's in trouble, because it's false and the lie will persist. Once he believes his Playmate is alive in his own right, he starts to oppose the Playmate. And now he's now in opposition with his own psyche. And there is the danger. Now, this material I've just given you up to this point on this tape is the lead-up material to the material on tape 2. You remember I gave on tape 2 the subject of the machines and the subject of the fixed solution to the problem. And then I talked then about dissociation. Well, this material I'm giving you now precedes that on the time track. It precedes it. Or another way to look at it, you might say that the the mental machines I spoke about in the second lecture are really just another name for the Playmate. Yes, you could look at it that way if you wanted to, that they're simply one and the same thing. But nevertheless, this bit of the tape of this lecture, up to this point, this material I've been giving you belongs prior to the material I gave on tape number 2. And putting the whole lot together, we now get the whole cycle of this subject of dissociation. This whole subject of the cycle of dissociation starts with the surprise game, goes through the game of the Playmate, and then all falls apart when the person, put it this way, if the person gets into later trouble and dissociation, starts to dissociate in their later life, it's because they believed that the Playmate was alive in his own right, and that's the basis of their troubles on it. You see that? That's the basic of their troubles on this game. The game, the Playmate game, falls apart at that point. You get it? And all their troubles with dissociation start at that point, because they then start to go into opposition with the parts of their own psyche, which is dissociation. So this material I'm giving you here and have given you here, in collaboration, in conjunction with the material on tape number 2, gives us the whole picture and gives us the whole, everything we need to know to resolve the subject and understand the subject of dissociation in the human psyche. I can tell you now, we've got the lot. We've got it all. We've got the lot. Once we understand the basic, the earliest on the track game that the person plays with themselves, the surprise game, then that leads into the game of the playmate, which is the game of the teddy bear in childhood. That's the keying, you might say, of the early track game. And if the person makes the terrible, falls into this terrible trap of believing that their playmate or their teddy bear is alive in his own right, they're doomed from that point onwards to go into mental dissociation. And they're prone to schizophrenia, they're prone to entities in their mind, they're prone to having voices talking to them, they're prone to all the horrors that you can read up in any psychiatric textbook on the subject of dissociation. But not everyone who makes this mistake with the in the playmate game will go insane. No, obviously not. But potentially they can. The mistake has been made. Do you get it? And we've now got all the data and all the material to handle it. Case-wise, all we have to run is the To Know Goals package. It's level 5 takes it apart. Level 5 takes it apart. That level 5 plus the surprise goals package, that little subsidiary one, the To Surprise Goals package. And if the person has entities and so forth, they can be, as I've already pointed out, they can be handled at levels 2 and level 3 of therapy too. They can be time broken at level 3, and they can be differences and similarities with entities can be found at level 2. And the whole subject of entities can be made the subject matter of the To Know Goals package at level 5C. So we have the four addresses to the subject of mental dissociation at level 2, level 3, level 5A, and level 5C. And we wrap up this subject now. We've wrapped it up completely. This whole subject of dissociation wraps up. Now, do you see what I meant when I said this tape should be run concurrently with and is a pair with tape number 2 of the set? The two of them form a pair. And we can now wrap up this whole subject of dissociation. So, as far as therapy is concerned, all we're adding on this tape is the To Surprise Goals package. It's just simply a junior goals package. You can add that at level 5B. That is the To Surprise Goals package. You throw that in. So really, strictly speaking, you can handle dissociation, entities and so forth at level 2, level 3, level 5A, level 5B with the To Surprise Goals package, and at level 5C by making the junior universe of entities the subject matter of the To Know Goals package. So there's our five addresses in TROM to the subject of dissociation. And I can assure you, within those five levels, we can crack this whole subject. Because we now know where it comes from. We now know all there is to know about the subject of dissociation. We've now got it licked. We can also know why Ron's technique of OT3 failed to handle the entities. The OT3, anyone who's attempted it and tried it knows that it goes on forever. And it does not flatten. Now, why doesn't it flatten? It won't flatten simply because while the person believes that these entities are alive in their own right, he's calling the lie. And while he's calling the lie, the process will not flatten. He can't get rid of the entities. Get it? He's simply falling into the trap that he fell into in the playmate game. He keeps saying that the playmate is alive in his own right. That's the lie. He isn't. The playmate is his own mock-up. While he believes that the playmate is alive in his own right, he starts building up mass on the playmate. And he starts to oppose the playmate, starts to go into dissociation. That's why the tone arm rises. When you're dealing with entities on OT3, you get a high tone arm and a snake needle. Why? Because you're building up mass. You keep calling the lie. In OT3, we have this unfortunate situation. It's a ridiculous situation of the pre-clear, or the clear, whatever he likes to call himself, with his right hand, he's trying to audit out entities and holding them in place with his left hand by insisting they're alive in their own right. In other words, he's playing games with himself and doesn't know he's doing it. Once he knows he's doing it, he can stop doing it. But the only way he'll ever find out he's doing it is to do the levels of TROM, the handless material with TROM. Then one day he'll say, my God, with my left hand I'm saying that the entities exist and they're alive in their own right, and with my right hand I'm trying to erase them out of my psyche. Well, how mad can I get? Then they all go. Then they erase. That's an end to it. He's now finished with his dissociation. He's broken through and understood the truth of the matter. He now finished and can now erase the surprise game and erase the game of the playmate and erase the entities. The whole lot now will go. Gone. End. That's it.